jingle stuck in my head all the time. I'd be like walking around, I'm like, well, good morning, church. It's great to be together. We are carrying on with our Over the Fence series here, where we're looking at and exploring how do we become people of influence and impact in our neighborhoods. And we've been dreaming about what if our backyard becomes the very starting point of God's redemptive mission to reach our community and to reach our city. It's been a wonderful series, and we've been using FENCE as the acronym to provide a framework for us. We started with F, which stands for first pray. We moved on to E, which stands for ears open. And this weekend is N, which is nachos or nourishment. I never imagined preaching a sermon titled Nachos. I didn't think that would be in my ministry career, especially not my first weekend here at FAC. But thanks to Pastor James, here I am preaching on nachos. How does nourishment play into God's redemptive plan of reaching the world? That's what we're going to be looking at. When we look at the world around us, it's remarkably easy to just feel so overwhelmed and under-resourced at all of the needs that are out there. In our world, there's physical needs, emotional needs, there's spiritual needs. And when we look at trying to have something to offer the great need that's out there, we just feel like, what can I do? Overwhelmed, under-resourced. I don't know about you, but I don't have to look at the external world around me to notice that there's a whole lot of needs and a lack of resources. I can just look at my own life. So frequently I find myself in circumstances or situations where there's just such a great need, and what can I do to help solve this need or this problem or this complexity or this circumstance or this situation that I find myself in? Overwhelmed, under-resourced. And then when we start talking about over the fence, it's like, yeah, like that's great. That's such a good, noble ambition. That's a good thing. The needs are so great. And again, we find ourselves overwhelmed and feeling under-resourced. So how do nachos help us in this world of great need where we feel like we may not have that much to offer? That's what we're going to be looking at this morning. Now, in the few moments that we have together, I want to look at what I think is the most well-known eating event in the Bible. It's the only miracle other than the resurrection that is in every gospel. Does anyone know what it is? Jesus feeding the 5,000. Yeah, Jesus feeding the 5,000. Only miracle that occurs in every gospel. And we're going to look at Mark's account this morning. So if you want to turn your Bibles to Mark chapter 6, starting with verse 30. I'm just going to read through the whole event, and then we're going to go through it, and I think God has some really good and important things to call us to this morning. So Mark chapter 6, verse 30, says this: "The apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. Then, because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, 'Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest.' So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. By this time it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. 'This is a remote place,' they said, 'and it's already very late. Send the people away so that they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat.' But he answered, 'You give them something to eat.' They said to him, 'That would take more than half a year's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat?' 'Well, how many loaves do you have?' he asked. 'Go and see.' When they found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. Then Jesus directed them to have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to his disciples to distribute to the people. He also divided the 2 fish among them all. They all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of the men who had eaten was 5,000. Pretty clearly an amazing moment in the life of every single person that was involved. A pretty remarkable miracle, epic proportions. I mean, as far as over the fence moments go, this is like the absolute bullseye, the target, the goal. An amazing over the fence moment. And there's so much for us to learn here in this. And starting with what we read at the very, very beginning, we read that the apostles gathered around Jesus. And church, that is the starting point of every single great move of God in the history of the church. The starting point is always gathering around Jesus, centering our lives on Jesus. As a community of people, may we always just gather ourselves and this community and center ourselves on Jesus. It's why we start with first pray. Because we center our lives on Jesus. And good things happen when we gather around him. So we see these apostles gathering around Jesus, reporting all they had done and taught. And then we see Jesus' first response is he cares for their needs. He's like, you guys, you're tired. You're weary. You've just finished this ministry tour. They had just found out that John the Baptist had died. So Jesus is like, let's go away, just us. Let's go to a remote place, to an isolated, desolate place where we can just recharge our batteries. So let's retreat. So they get in the boat, and they're sailing across the lake. And as they're sailing to this remote, isolated, desolate place, we read that people from every town started to run around the lake to get to where Jesus was going. It says from every single town, people were getting up, running around the lake just to go and meet where Jesus was going. There was something so compelling and so magnetic and so attractional about the person of Jesus that people were willing to run from all over every city just to get to where he was going. And like this was before like Twitter or texting or phone calls or internet. Like there was something so magnetic about Jesus that from every town, thousands of people were willing to run to where Jesus was going. And it just drives home the truth that when Jesus is on the move, you just can't keep people away. When people have experienced or seen Jesus, they just can't stay away from him. And there's a desperation that I will run around a lake so fast I'll beat the boat just because I want to see Jesus. And I want to hear from Jesus. And church, I'm convinced that there are people in every single one of our neighborhoods that are desperate to see Jesus. They don't know it. They're running to all kinds of desolate, isolated, remote places, hoping to find what only Jesus can offer. There's all kinds of people running to all kinds of places and things to try and find what only Jesus can give. So they run around the lake, they beat Jesus there. And we read that when Jesus and the apostles, when they land at this desolate place, they're met by thousands. And the disciples respond probably how most of us would. Jesus, just send them away. Can you get rid of these people? Like, we're tired, we're exhausted. Let's eat, let's rest, let's nap. Then we can tackle the need and the problem at hand. But can you just send them away for a little bit? And I love that Jesus does not respond that way. When Jesus landed and saw the large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. Drained in every single way, yet when Jesus sees the crowd, he sees sheep without a shepherd. And you compare that to the disciples. What did the disciples see? They just saw sheep and they saw the mess and the inconvenience and the interruption and the draining of energy that it would take to serve them. See, where the disciples saw an inconvenience, Jesus saw an invitation. And where the disciples saw a mess, Jesus saw an opportunity to share the message. The disciples were like, no, they're in the way, they're an interruption. We weren't ready for this. Just send them away, we'll get there later. And Jesus says, no, they're sheep without a shepherd. They're looking for what I can give. And he serves them. It's really interesting. If you're ever bored, read through the New Testament and look only at all of the interruptions. Look at every time that Jesus was interrupted or caught off guard by a plan that or by something that he wasn't expecting. Almost every single time in the Gospels that Jesus is interrupted or caught off guard or surprised by something, a miracle happens right after. And that's really, really challenging for me. I'm not too good at interruptions. I'm not too good at changes in the plans. I like strategy and I like that kind of world. And yet when I see every single time Jesus is interrupted, a miracle happens thereafter, I can't help but wonder if God is trying to get our attention and say, these interruptions, these inconveniences, they're opportunities that I'm dropping right in front of you so that you can share my message. I'm providing opportunities for you to talk about me. I'm just planting them right in front of you. I also find it fascinating how at the very beginning, it says the apostles that gather around Jesus and they report to him all they had done and taught. They had just finished their first successful ministry tour. They're going back to Jesus talking about all the things they had done. And then just a few sentences later, we read that the greatest opportunity any of them had ever had to do or teach about Jesus, they just want to dismiss it. And I think it brings into our attention, into our focus, that too often we can do all kinds of great things for Jesus without actually viewing the world around us the way that Jesus views the world around us. We can come to church and have an amazing time and say, let revival come. But then when we get home and we see our neighbors like, let the garage door close fast enough. Or we go to work and it's like over the fence, nah. We can do all kinds of great doing and teaching without actually viewing the world the way that Jesus does. And I so long that when I see the world around me, I see it and I see people like sheep without a shepherd rather than sheep that just create a mess and say, I'll get to it when I'm more charged up, when I'm more energetic. May we view the world the way that Jesus does. See, Jesus sees the opportunity as an amazing invitation to talk about God, to talk about who he is and what he does. We read that it was late in the day, the disciples were like, Jesus, just send him away, send him away. And rather than doing that, Jesus says, well, why don't you feed them? You give them something to eat. And the disciples are like, because Jesus, that would take 8 months worth of work. Like, do you really want us to go and spend that much money on just providing them something to eat? And the disciples start immediately doing this like mental math of, okay, there's 5,000 men, there's women and children. So let's say conservatively 15,000 people here, 15,000 people. If we're just going to get them some bread, yeah, we're going to have to work for 8 months. Jesus, do you really want us to meet the needs around us this way? Do you really want us to spend that much money? And for us on this side of the text, on this side of the story, it's easy for us to scoff at them and say, come on, guys, where's your faith? You're with Jesus. Where's your faith? Why don't you just ask him to do it? And so it's easy for us to look on this side of the story and say, you guys, come on. Just have a little faith. But the reality is that far too often, and far more than any of us would like to admit, that's how we try to meet the needs that we face as well. We try to resource our way through them. Maybe it is with money. Maybe when we feel needs out in the world or needs within our own soul, we think, you know, if I just had a little bit more, or if I spend it this way. I mean, maybe it's not money. Maybe it's power, or prestige, a career. Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's a person. Maybe it's a substance. I don't know. One pastor said, for every person, it's either a talent issue, a time issue, or a treasure issue. That's how we try and meet the needs around us. And when we look at this idea of over the fence, we do the exact same thing. Think, oh man, Jesus, there's no way. I'm not smart enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not funny enough. I'm not articulate enough. I don't know the Bible well enough. I'm not godly enough. I'm not old enough, or I'm not young enough, or I'm not this enough. I'm not fill in the blank enough. But really what we're doing is we're doing the exact same thing that the disciples said. There's no way we can do this. There's no way we can meet this need. There's just not a chance that we can do this. I'm not fill in the blank enough. And I love how Jesus responds. Jesus doesn't even acknowledge their perspective of lack. He changes their perspective entirely. And he says, well, what do you have? Why don't you go and see what you have? See what's already in your possession. And the point is, church, that the ingredients for the things that God's calling us to do are already in our possession. He's not asking if we think they're sufficient enough. He's not asking if we think they will go far enough in meeting the needs or the demands of the people around us or the things in our world. He's simply asking, well, what do you have? And he's asking us to acknowledge the God potential that's already in our possession. 2 Peter 1, it says that his divine power has given us everything we need for a godly life. His divine power has given us everything that we need for a godly life. And the truth is this. Everything we need to do everything that he has called us to is already in our possession. Everything we need to do everything that he's called us to is already in our possession. And church, he's calling us to go over the fence. So everything we need to do over the fence is already in our possession. Jesus says, well, what do you have? So the disciples, they go and they do this inventory and they discover that a young boy has 5 loaves and 2 fish. Now, I don't have to belabor the point or hammer it home that 5 loaves and 2 fish are remarkably insufficient for 5,000 men plus women and children. Right? Like that wouldn't make it past 3 men, never mind 5,000. But that's what they had. So they give it to Jesus. And here's a really interesting side point that I think is really, it's worth sharing with you. Have you ever noticed that the 5 loaves and the 2 fish come from the one person that wasn't even considered worthy to be counted? That's got to be encouraging for someone here. The person that wasn't even considered worthy to be a statistic was the very person that God chose to use to bring about this amazing provision for every person there. So if you have ever felt overlooked, undervalued, not good enough, not smart enough, if you have ever felt like you just aren't a part of the big picture of things, then the good news is you are the very person that God wants to use to do something amazing through. God loves to take the person that everyone else in the world discounts because it's there that he gets the most honor. He's done it for all of time. He did it with David, the youngest brother. He did it with Gideon, the smallest guy in the smallest tribe. And he loves to take the one that everybody else discounts. That little boy wasn't even considered worthy counting, and he was the very one that God brought about this amazing provision for everyone through. He wants to use us. The disciples, they take this inventory. This young boy who wasn't even counted, he gives his 5 loaves, his 2 fish to Jesus, and Jesus has everyone sit down on the green grass. And it says that Jesus takes this woefully insufficient offering, he takes it into his hands, he gives thanks to God, he breaks it, and he hands it out. But notice that Jesus took everything that they offered into his hands. He takes it all. And this is the way of the kingdom. It's kingdom economics, if you will. Only when we empty ourselves of everything that we have do we get to experience all that Jesus can do. They emptied everything to Jesus and said, here you go, do with it what you will. And only when we empty ourselves of all that we have and to say, Jesus, here, I feel like it's woefully insufficient, but will you take it and will you do something with this, that we get to experience everything that Jesus can do. One pastor says that what's given fully to the Lord is fully used by the Lord. And he said later on that Jesus cannot multiply that which we do not supply. So may we be a people that offer to Jesus everything we have. Say, do with it what you will. It's woefully insufficient, but I trust you, Jesus. Charles Spurgeon, while preaching on this, he says that there's no better place in the world to be than the blessed loaves in the hands of the Savior. There's no better place to be. Jesus takes our offering. He takes what we offer him into his hands. We may not feel like it's sufficient enough, but then I just believe that Jesus says right back to us, "Oh, my child, that's the very best kind of offering. My grace, my power, my strength is sufficient in your weakness. Now let's do something amazing together." And we'd be a people that offer to Jesus everything that we have. As Jesus takes and blesses and breaks and distributes, we read that every single person there ate to beyond satisfaction. There were leftovers. There was an incredible need, and yet Jesus went above and beyond. He far surpassed their expectations. Brené Brown writes in Daring Greatly that the mantra of our day and age is never enough. We live in a world that is never enough. We never have enough of fill in the blank. And yet we read here that every single person was satisfied with what Jesus provided. Now, can you imagine with me what it would look like if every person that came here this weekend experienced enough in Jesus? And then can you imagine, even bigger picture, if every person in Calgary had enough, satisfied? It would literally change the world. And I'm crazy enough to believe that it can happen. Ephesians 3 says, "Now to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine, according to his power," not our offering, "his power that is at work within us." So AKA FAC, take the greatest over the fence win that you can possibly imagine. And Jesus says, "Not even close, we can do more." I believe that. And it starts when we gather and center our lives around Jesus. And then it continues as we just offer him and say, "Jesus, here, take with it, do with it what you will. Make me a vessel, make me an offering, make me what you want me to be, and I'll go over the fence. Do immeasurably more than all we can ask or imagine. King Jesus, reign in our church, in our neighborhood, in our city. Give to you the time, talent, treasure that I have. Do with it what you will." This miracle, it's actually the first, as far as miracles in the New Testament go, it's the first miracle that falls into this category. The specific category. Up until now, every miracle that Jesus had done was either redemptive, restorative, or transformative. What do I mean by that? Redeeming things. So the blind can see. Mute can talk. Deaf can hear. He's redeeming things, right? Or restoring things that once were. Or transforming things from water into wine. Transforming weather. Every miracle up until this point in all four of the Gospels was either restorative, redemptive, or transformative. Every miracle. One of those three categories. But this is a new category of miracles, because here Jesus is calling into existence something that previously did not exist. Okay? What do I mean by that? The food, the bread, and the fish that was going out to feed the thousands and thousands of people, that bread and that fish did not exist that morning. The language that's used in the Gospels, it says that it was multiplied in his hands. The offering was multiplied in Jesus' hands. It wasn't like Jesus was like running to the lake, grabbing some fish, distributing them, running back to the lake, getting more fish and distributing it. The miracle was happening right in his hands. He was calling into existence something that was previously not there. So in Jesus' hands, there was a brand new way for every person there to find their physical nourishment, find their satisfaction, because what Jesus created in his hands. I'm going somewhere with this. To understand it, we have to look at a sentence in this passage that I'm guessing almost every single one of us missed when we first read through it. It's where we read, "When Jesus directed them to have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass." It's the green grass bit that I want to focus in on. So for us, we think, oh, green grass, okay, just read it. But the Bible doesn't often talk about like green grass or blue sky. There's just a few times throughout the entire narrative of Scripture that we actually see that kind of like a describing word before it. And it's so very important. For us, where we are here in Calgary, we're so far removed from the day and age when this was written that we just think, okay, green grass. But the first readers would have immediately been able to pinpoint on the calendar when this happened. Because for them, green grass was a very, very small window of time that would happen on the calendar. Israel, hot. There wasn't a lot of green grass. So they would read this. Jesus directed them to have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. Oh, it's Passover time. That's when green grass happens. It's like us, right? First snowfall. Oh, first week of September, right? Because July. Yeah, they would have been, oh, green grass? It's Passover. Maybe for us, it's like Christmas lights. Oh, it's Christmas season. It was that synonymous. It was that easily identifiable for them. And Mark is trying to make a connection between what happens here in Mark chapter 6 with what happens 1 year later at Passover. So in Mark 6, we read that Jesus takes the food into his hands. He gives thanks. He blesses it, he breaks it, and he passes it out. And then in Mark chapter 14, we read that Jesus took the bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and gave it to his disciples. The connection is meant to be made for us here. In the same, so Jesus both times takes the food into his hands. He gives thanks. He breaks it and he hands it out to the disciples. I wonder how long it was before the disciples started to understand what Jesus was trying to teach them at Passover. I wonder how long it was before they started to clue in, saying, oh my goodness, you guys, last year, remember, Jesus did this. And he provided the physical nourishment out of nothing that every single person there needed. And remember, everyone, all 15,000, 20,000, 10,000, all of us, thousands of people, everyone had all that they needed because of what Jesus called into existence in his hands. Out of nothing. Remember? And then I wonder when they started to clue in that with Jesus in his hands, taking the loaves, breaking it, saying, this is my body which is broken for you. And then a mere few hours later, in his hands, taking the nails and creating a brand new way for everyone to be human. I wonder how long it was before they made that connection, that in the same way, every person had everything they need met in Jesus. And in Mark chapter 6, that in Jesus, in his life, in his death, in his resurrection, that every human ever can be fully satisfied in Jesus. That out of nothing, he created a way for people to be physically nourished to go home. And then a year later on the cross, out of nothing, in his hands, he created a brand new way for every human to live forever and to be fully satisfied, not just for a day, but for forever, have life and life to the full. The connection is meant to be made. Out of nothing, Jesus has created a new way for us to live and to find our nourishment. To live, move, and have our being. Jesus not only provided physically for those thousands of people, but on the cross, and far more significantly, he provided everything that every person will ever need to overflow by his body being broken for us. It's a new miracle. It's a new way to be human. It's interesting to me as I was reading and studying through this text. I noticed something that I'd never noticed before, and it's the title. So in my Bible, this section is called Jesus Feeds the 5,000. I'm guessing it's that way for most of our Bibles here. But have you ever noticed that that is actually a wrong title? Have you ever noticed that? If we read it again, it says Jesus took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish. And then looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke it. Then he gave them to his disciples to distribute to the people. See, Jesus never actually fed the 5,000 people. It was the disciples that went out and fed the multitude. And this is the key for us here this morning, church. Because this is still the absolute heart of Jesus. Jesus has provided everything. and created the miracle. And then he has entrusted us to be messengers of the message. See, we're not called to create the miracle. Jesus has already done that. Jesus has already done everything. But we are all called to be the messengers of the miracle, to be the ones that distribute the news of what Jesus has already done. In him, he has created the miracle, then he gives that to us and says, go. This is what Over the Fence is all about. Trusting that Jesus is the one that has called us and he has already done everything we need. And we just get to go as his ambassadors, as his messengers of the miracle. So let's get practical. Over the Fence, N, nachos, nourishment. How do we do this? How do we do this well? How are we good ambassadors and messengers of the miracle? Well, in this book, Over the Fence Guide, the N stands for nourish, nachos. It says, I will share meals and spend time with the people in my life. So here's a few really easy next steps, church. One, have your over-the-fence neighbor over for some food. Eat together. You know, a lot of people in academics are now on this motif saying that Jesus ate his way through the Gospels. I mean, Jesus was called a glutton, right? He ate with people. He ate with all kinds of people. You don't get called a glutton by accident or by just eating a normal amount. Like, he ate with people. And there's a reason. We're meant to eat with people. So have people over. And before you get nervous about cooking and maybe your cooking capacity, it doesn't have to be a world-class meal. In fact, my dad once said to me that the moment you try to impress someone, you often lose the capacity to impact them. Just have people over. Watch the game. Have a coffee. Have a tea. Have cookies. It doesn't have to be some gourmet meal. If you want it to be, that's great. But just have people over. Eat together. It was so interesting for Chelsea, my wife and I, when we were looking to moving here and looking to buy a house, we noticed that a lot of the houses and a lot of the, particularly the newer builds, the kitchen was a lot smaller than we would have anticipated, just based on like the floor plan and layout of the house. And so we asked our realtor, like, what's that about? Why are so often these kitchens just seem smaller than the rest of the floor plan? And our realtor said, it's because most people nowadays don't really care about cooking meals at home or having people over. They just take things, take out, or they go out. And it was so fascinating to us that the gift of hospitality, it's becoming a very lost art in this day and age. And yet the Bible says that the gift of hospitality is a spiritual gift that he has given to people. Let's reclaim the art of hospitality. My brother-in-law has a way with words, and he reminded us a couple years ago that it's no coincidence that the root word of hospital and hospitality are the same thing. People find healing, find nourishment for body and soul as we eat together. Let's have people over for food. Let's have people over. Let's lead the way in hospitality. People find healing through it. Maybe you need to make a coffee date at work or a lunch date. We're going to walk and have lunch together, or we're going to go for coffee once a month. Maybe you're just going to make a commitment to sit with someone at school that you normally wouldn't sit with, or invite them to come and sit at your table. Let's eat together. Another very easy win, take Alpha with someone. Alpha has food provided. It's good food. The Alpha course, it's unbelievable. It has literally changed the world. If there's someone popping in your mind right now that you could do Alpha with, ask them. Take Alpha. If you need more information, you can get it out on Main Street. It's a great, great win. Explore faith. Ask good questions. Enjoy good food. Easy win. Another thing. Anyone here like to practice? You know, before, like, you know, the main event, if you want practice, just me? Okay. That's fine. One other. Pastor James has mentioned several times in this series that practice doesn't make perfect, but it does make possible. And so I started brainstorming and dreaming with Pastor James and our Harvest Kitchen staff about providing an opportunity here where we could actually practice this. So once a month here at FAC, we have something called Wings and Things, right? Where our amazing kitchen team, they make food, whether it be wings or pizza, or they make all kinds of different things. And it's available for $4 after the service, and it's just a chance to eat together. And I started talking about what the sermon was going to be on with Nourish and Nachos and with the kitchen staff. And we started saying, well, why don't we move it to this weekend so that after the service, we can have a dress rehearsal as a church. And so they did. They moved wings and things to this weekend. Now, we did have nachos last night for Pastor James' evening. We thought maybe not, you know, some people may not want nachos in the morning, so we're having a pancake sundae bar, and it's going to be awesome. But it's an opportunity for us to simply practice. We do the first pray. We do ears open. We eat together. And so we've provided an opportunity for us to all have a dress rehearsal before we actually go out. So find someone you don't know. Sit with them. Practice. Be a great opportunity. But just remember that our goal is to go over the fence, not across the aisle. So this is just practice before we actually do the real thing with people. Eat with people. I end with this in the story. Every single person here in the room right now falls into one of two categories. All of us. We're either the ones that need to receive the miracle and provision of Jesus. Maybe you've been running to a desperate space, a desperate place, a desolate place. Or there's just this sense of there's great, great need, overwhelmed, under-resourced. And it's just, I need to receive what Jesus has. I need grace. I need peace. I need love. Or you fall into the second category, which is being called to be the one that goes. You've tasted and seen that the Lord is good. Say, okay, Jesus, I don't think I have much to offer, but what I do have here, I give to you. I'll pray, I'll listen, and however you want to use what I have to give, I will go. One of my heroes of faith at Vernon Alliance Church, where I was working before here, he pulled me aside in the foyer once, and he's like, Kyle, we're either the missionary or we're the mission field. It's just about that simple. We're either called to be missionaries or we're the mission field. We're either the ones that need Jesus and what he has to offer, or we've been called to go over the fence. First pray. Ears open. Nourishment. Being the messengers of the miracle that Jesus has done. It's the beautiful adventure, and it's the amazing invitation that Jesus has for every single one of us. So bless you, church, as we go over the fence together. Have a great week.